We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
The funny thing is, though, you don't really... You don't hear many experiences, yes. They're sort of a different cut from a different cloth. But you're run-of-the-mill, like, especially these military witnesses you're talking about, you don't really get that kind of perspective. You don't really see a lot of as much self, the kind of depth of self-introspection that you're seeking. It's almost like you don't necessarily see that from people. They're just like, I saw this UFO, man. It was crazy. What do you think it was? You know, we almost have to train people to be like, I wonder why I saw that. Like, I guess that's the thing. Like, people ask, what was it that I saw? They don't really ask, like, why did I just see that? And maybe that's the changing of the questions that we need to think about if we really want to try and even begin to understand what this is. Because, like, right, I just saw this thing, and what is it? Isn't working.
Right. And like you were saying, too, I mean, you know, the other thing, when experiencers or someone who says that they're in contact with a higher consciousness, like, you know, I see people, whether they're on Twitter or TikTok or on the internet, wherever, or they contact me and they say they're, you know, in contact with a higher consciousness or an extraterrestrial intelligence that is vastly superior to ours. And then I look at what information they do give me, whether it be on their social media or their Facebook or their Twitter or whatever. And, I mean, you know, their posts are vitriol against other human beings. And I'm like, how can you be in contact with a supreme extraterrestrial intelligence that no longer differentiates, you know, human beings, sees us as a single species, and yet you are still hating these other people because of their color or gender?
Yeah. Well, I think you put out a fantastic tweet a few, months ago, maybe a year ago or something like that, where it was just like, what makes these pro-disclosure people think that we deserve, I'm sort of paraphrasing, so forgive me, I think I got the point right, but it's been about a year or so, but it was something along the lines of like, what makes these pro-disclosure people think that that we deserve, that they, like, what makes them think that the aliens would consider us deserving of being a part of any sort of off-Earth community? Like, we have all these problems down here. We haven't figured out anything. It's a bad place.
Yeah, I just tweeted probably this week something very similar that said, work to create a planet that aliens would want to visit.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Again, it's like this catch-22 where it's like, no, don't worry about it. The aliens are going to fix all that. Like, when the fuck are they getting here? When are they getting... Oh, man.
And then, like we said earlier, and then when they tell us what the fix is, half of us aren't going to do it anyway.
Right, exactly. yeah, exactly. Well, I can see the aliens showing up.
Because if you can't get people on board to, like, I'm just thinking to myself, like, I mean, the human race is very stubborn. And when the aliens come down and say, listen, okay, the thing that we need you guys to do, like, you have to stop using oil tomorrow. Like, that's not going to go over well.
Right. I was going to give you an even more, an even darker example, actually. And I preface this by telling people that my father died of lung cancer, and I'm still a smoker. So, but I can imagine the aliens arrive here on Earth, and they say, and we tell them we have all these problems, and the alien doctor comes out, and he's like, I have good news for you, everyone. We have a surefire way to bring your lung cancer rates down to, like, almost fucking zero. And everyone on Earth will be like, what? Oh, my God. Oh, hail the aliens. Praise the aliens. And what's the answer? And they're like, stop smoking those fucking cigarettes. Stop smoking those. And you'll get rid of the lung cancer. Like, what don't you people understand? That's all you need to do. There, we cured your lung cancer. Now, give us all your gold. So, yeah, I mean, maybe this is a stunning thing. Maybe we have the answers to all our fucking problems, and we should just figure it out down here and stop worrying about the aliens coming, because they're fucking way overdue.
Yeah, people are going to be really pissed off if extraterrestrials land all over the Earth and they send their ambassador to the world's ambassadors and we have a big conference and it's streamed live on YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok, and the aliens have stand up in front of the United Earth Federation. All of the people on the planet are watching it, and the aliens say, okay, first thing, you guys have to be nice to each other.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of people who go, this is bullshit.
Oh, yeah, and an even greater percentage that were like, I could totally do that. And within like a week, they're just back to being complete assholes.
Yeah.
So, you know, message received. Oh, man. I'm going to pivot here to something else because so people don't get too, plus it's sort of like the mid-hour point, so I like to kind of change the pace a little bit. Now, I know, yeah, I associate you predominantly with the ghost stuff. Have you ever looked at Bigfoot, though? I know you lecture on a vast array of things. You're like me. I liken myself to like a paranormal veterinarian where I need to be able to speak and talk on every possible thing under the sun and write about it. So, and you're of the same sort of mindset. So have you looked at Bigfoot at all? I find that's probably my favorite of all the mysteries.
Yeah. I do. I mean, you know, for me, again, being a child of the 70s and growing up with In Search Of, it was always UFOs, ghosts, and Bigfoot. Like, that's, you know, where my heart has always been. Those are the three pillars. Those are the ones that, you know, got me started. I still have the books that I stole from my elementary school library, you know, Bigfoot, UFOs, and ghosts. Like, those are the three books that I stole. And it is, you know, I have gone on a bunch of Bigfoot hunts and talked to a lot of people who have seen Bigfoot. And in Michigan, we have Dogman, which, you know, is another big cryptid. So that fascinates me. But, yeah, Bigfoot is another one of those things that it cracks me up because here's a kind of great story about people who don't believe in Bigfoot and people who kind of do. So I did a Bigfoot hunt maybe 6 or 7 years ago, where after the convention that I was at, the speakers had spoke, and then we were going to go out into the woods and we were going to, you know, tree knock and do Bigfoot hollers and look for Bigfoot tracks and stuff like that. It was at, I think, Daniel Boone State Park in Kentucky. And one of the newspaper reporters came out and he was very skeptical about Bigfoot. And he said, well, you guys are probably just going to dress someone up in a gorilla suit and have them run around out in the woods. And I looked at him in all seriousness, and I said, do you really think that Bigfooters are so stupid they would dress someone up in a Bigfoot costume, have them run around while people are hunting Bigfoot in Kentucky, where most of the people at this event are armed? Like someone here wants to shoot a Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Jeez. That's so weird. Like, yeah, that would be, like, A, the dumbest thing to do, and B, like, we talk about the religiosity of this, but it's like it would be like heresy. I mean, sure, there are hoaxers and stuff in that, but like when you're that deep into the belief system or sort of that deep into it would be like sacrilege. You know what I'm saying? It's like the Bigfoot is
Yes. You're
chasing the Bigfoot. It would be like there's a certain that's kind of what I like about Bigfoot as compared to UFOs, like there's a certain like reverence. Maybe it's like a reverence of nature or something. Like maybe that's really what it is. But there's a certain reverence for Bigfoot that I don't see with flying saucers. Flying saucers are more of like a savior complex. But no one expects Bigfoot to fucking save them or solve all our problems. It's more of like Bigfoot represents this vanishing wilderness, this vanishing mystery of the wild, if you will.
Yeah, Bigfoot is the extension of, you know, fairies and elves and the Green Man mythology, and, you know, it's this primal part of us that stays hidden. We know it's out there somewhere. It's that part of ourselves that reconnects with nature. And, you know, it's searching for Bigfoot is very much searching yourself. It's going out into nature. It's allowing yourself to look at nature and look at the ground and look at the trees and listen to the birds and the bird sounds. It's very much a reconnection with who we probably were supposed to be.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. But sort
of
cutting aside,
that,
yeah.
I was just going to say, one of the things I find funny, and I've talked about this at my lectures, is that, you know, out of the three pillars, UFOs, ghosts, and Bigfoot, I think what's so funny is that two of those pillars, you know, one is UFOs, and, you know, we're obsessed with, like, giant gray alien heads and the flying disc itself, but mostly when you talk about aliens, you talk about big-headed grays and their long, spindly fingers and arms. We never talk about their feet. And whenever you see pictures of ghosts, it's always, you know, you don't see their feet. And then the third pillar is literally named after feet.
Wow. Yeah, I never considered that. Yeah.
It's almost like the phenomena is saying, like, look, I see what you're doing here, and I'm going to fuck you up a little bit more. I'm going to give you one of them that's all feet, and then the other two are not going to have anything to do with feet.
Weird. Yeah. Well, feet set a lot of people off, so who knows? I remember, this is funny, this is a total side story, but, like, and maybe you didn't originally come up with this idea, so... But you at your lecture in Portland, you mentioned how, like, how they call it Bigfoot, but it's like the Bigfoot is, the foot is proportional to the creature. It's not like
right.
It has an enormously. And then later I saw this Geico commercial where the lady is talking to Bigfoot and she's like explaining the insurance deals or whatever. And she's like, so that's the deal, Bigfoot. And he kind of like looks at her, he's like, my name's Daryl. And it's just kind of like struck me that, yeah, the naming of Bigfoot is so old school that it's quaint, but also kind of like just so nonsensical. It's like, so we call him Bigfoot because, what, he leaves big footprints around, I guess. Yeah. Very strange.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, too, because that's it's kind of the same thing with flying saucers, right? Like, whatever just is the easiest at the moment, right? So, like, here's this thing that leaves big feet print. Let's just call it Bigfoot. Here are these things that look like flying saucers. Let's just call them flying saucers and give up. Like, I think that's pretty funny, too. Like, there's a certain aspect to the phenomena where it's like, okay, that's good enough. That's exactly what it looks like, and we'll just call it that from this point forward.
Yeah. But have you... Do you have – it's hard to really – I'm kind of – I'll sort of go first because I don't want to put you on the spot. But it's like I'm going to ask you, like, what do you think Bigfoot is? But to me, it's like I have a very shorter list, but an all-of-the-above type of thing with Bigfoot too, where it's like, you know, I'd like to think, much like the ETH, it's like I'd like to think the most basic premise is true because it would be the most fun in a sense or the most I could acclimate to, where there's just this bipedal ape thing running around and – that would be pretty awesome. But I'm open to all the other interesting, fantastical ideas that, like, this is interdimensional and it's a product of the mind, or Greg Newkirk said it's a ghost. So to me, it's like it could be all of these above, all of the above. But is there any sort of interesting aspect of, like, the what is Bigfoot question that, you know, you find particularly interesting?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Greg and I had this discussion long ago because, you know, just at certain points, people are at different points in their journey. But, you know, I think that when we look at things like ghosts or flying saucers or Bigfoot or any kind of cryptid, I think that we are looking at combinatorial systems. I think that we're seeing multiple different aspects of something that seems to be the same. I don't have any problem with there being a physical upright hominid that's hiding from us that exists on this planet. I think in my brain that's the funnest aspect. But again, I've talked to too many people who have seen Bigfoot vanish in and out of portals. I've talked to people who have seen Bigfoot reacting as a nature spirit. I've talked to people who have seen Bigfoot coming out of UFO craft. Like, so I think that all those options are on the table, as they are with any part of the phenomena. Like, again, I think when we were talking earlier about telling people, giving people larger options and more options and perhaps endless options is where people's brains start to fry, where they say, you know, like, well, I can believe in Bigfoot, but I can't believe in a nature spirit. I can believe in a nature spirit, but I can't believe he's getting off a UFO. I think that, you know, once you jump over the edge, you've got to jump over the edge. And that means embracing all of the weirdness in any form that it might take, but not to the degree that you plunge over the side to your death. I mean, that's the other thing too, is we are in a state where, and I think you're old enough and have done this long enough too, the paranormal and conspiratorial world, these things to me were meant to be exercises in critical thinking. It was meant to strengthen our bullshit detecting. It wasn't meant to be that you believed in them outright and did not question them ever. It was that they were meant to be questioned so that you could have larger discussions about the nature of strangeness, and therefore your bullshit and your lie detecting skills went off the charts. And
Because I think I ran into that actually when I was out with my family for Thanksgiving. So one of the people said, "Oh, you believe in a lot of strange things." I didn't correct her because I didn't want to get into it. And now I didn't really have a proper answer until just now listening, talking to you. But it's like, yes, the best way to explain it might be that, like, I don't believe any of this stuff. These are mysteries. These are mysteries. That's what drew me into them. They're mysteries. I haven't settled on an answer to any of them. I'm still trying to solve the mystery. And once you get into, like, you believe in Bigfoot because and you believe that it's this, that, or the other thing, then it ceases to be a mystery anymore. Now it's a belief system.
Right. And belief systems can be troublesome because they by their nature, a belief system is unchanging. And if the universe has ever shown us anything, it's that it just loves to fuck stuff up and change things. Like, so here you are rooted in a belief system and no longer capable of change, and so you're going to probably lash out, attack, or retreat back into a bubble if questioned about your belief system, where if that belief was simply an idea, all of a sudden there's flexibility and malleability there to where you can change and not feel like you're being attacked, and there's no reason to attack back or retreat.
Exactly. I think people need to maybe reconfigure their minds in a way if they're too deep into the belief system to remember that these are mysteries. We don't know what what any of this stuff is. So that's like the whole point. But one of the you briefly touched on this, I think, but one of the biggest bummers of the last few years, to those of us who have been in this for a long time, is we're moving to a whole different direction here, but it's just how the world of conspiracy theory has just turned really shitty, where, I don't know, until about, like, maybe it got really bad in the last few years, but it was getting bad, like, since 9/11, but nowadays you can't even, there's not, it's just not, it's just the conspiracy, I guess the best way to put it is, like, conspiracy theory has become divorced from the paranormal, whereas it used to be the fourth pillar, I think. I think it was UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, conspiracy theories. And now it's like conspiracy theories is way the fuck out of here. It's broken down and it's become a whole other world. And it's not really a part of sort of this, I don't know, overall genre anymore in a way. To some people, I'm sure it is. In a sense, it is, I guess, because it's sort of fringe still. But I think you understand what I'm saying. It was like there was a quaintness to conspiracy theory that isn't there anymore, that is still kind of there with all the other, with the remaining three pillars.
Conspiracy theory, I agree. Conspiracy theory at one time was kind of the fourth pillar. And I think one of the things that was so interesting to me was that, you know, there are still conspiracies wrapped inside of the UFO phenomena. They haven't completely been divorced from that. You know, there's still some because you have the government involvement, because you have military involvement, there's still some conspiracy wrapped in the UFO phenomena. But I feel like, again, you know, people, like, they pick their weirdnesses. And since conspiracy tends to have a ton of sometimes incorrect, but factual historical documentation, you know, if you're talking about the Kennedy assassination, you can start with some physical facts, like Kennedy was the president, Kennedy was killed. So immediately it makes it seem as that those are the more real than UFOs, ghosts, and Bigfoot, because you have, you know,
right,
some solid people, you have some solid historical fact. But I think that's what drives a lot of conspiracy theorists the most crazy is, you know, if you're dealing in a world of extra-dimensional beings and extraterrestrial time travelers, there is, again, some fluidity and malleability to where you can go in your thinking. When you are rooted in something in historical fact and the fact isn't shaped to your narrative, that's where a lot of people, I feel, snap. There's no malleability. They're like, you know, Kennedy was killed this way. We didn't go to the moon. You know, the Illuminati control everything. You can look at this rich family. They were an actual real rich family. And that's where your mind starts to break. And again, I think that conspiracy theories in a lot of times are just, you know, they absolutely are. Like, they're just alternative narratives to history. You know, you're reading perspectives of history from people who didn't win. And so you get to see diverse ideas. But that was the exercise that I was talking about earlier for your critical thinking skills. Like, conspiracy theorists should have been the first fucking people to jump on bad conspiracy theories.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the funny part, too. That the what's interesting is the – you. I don't even think Alex Jones is mixed up in that anymore. But the point being is, like, you can see this clear delineation of, like, all the people that you thought of growing up in this field, and me too. Well, Jim Maher is no longer with us. But your Ken Thomases, your general conspiracy theorists who were players in the conspiracy milieu, they're not the ones driving all of this stuff. It's a very interesting dynamic where it's like this – breakaway conspiracy theory, talking about like the Q thing mostly, but just in general, it's like the old school conspiracy theorists are kind of looking at all this, like shaking their heads, like, what are these people even talking about? Like satanic rituals and all this shit that we were laughing about like in the 80s, and now it's all new again. And then they believe it. This is crazy.
Yeah. And again, I think that it's because it also tends, like conspiracy theory, especially the way that it's hitting America right now, right? Like it tends to, what's the best way to even say this? I know how I think about it internally. I just don't know how to verbalize it. If you look at conspiracy theorists now, conspiracy theorists used to make up a vast, diverse crowd of people and modes of thinking. But mainstream conspiracy theory now has once again turned to kind of white middle-class America who aren't happy that the shit isn't going their way. And that's where people's brains are breaking. Like, why can't be the way it has always been for me? And I think that's, you know, it locks itself into this idea that, you know, well, I'm thinking about this, you're not, I'm smarter than you, I figured out why my life is going badly. The reality is, you know, we don't live, I just saw someone posting on Twitter earlier, you know, there is no Hydra. We're not living in a Marvel comic book universe. It's much easier for people to think that Hydra is running the world, or the Illuminati, or the Freemasons, or the Rosicrucians, or the Knights Templar, or whoever are running the world, than to realize that the reason your life is fucked up is because maybe you did something in your life that fucked it up and you might have been able to do it better, maybe.
Now it's the deep state. It's not even...
Well, right.
The call is coming
and
from within the house. It's not some powerful elite group of people. It's the insiders who are fucking us over.
And the thing is, what's crazy is that there are people that the world is working against, but they're not hugely into conspiracy theory because they're busy making the world not be actually against them. And it's not really white middle-class America. White middle-class America is okay. Like, they have become so bored, they have found a way to make the world against them with conspiracy theory, when the reality of the situation is the majority of people who aren't white middle-class America do have a lot of laws and limitations pushed against them socially, historically, and they're working to actually change things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The whole boredom aspect definitely resonates. You can definitely see that. And I think a lot of it did. There was quite a turn when the pandemic happened because people got all bottled up in their house and they got mixed up with this shit. And it's like, oh, man, you know, because when you don't have any answers, try and find answers. And nowadays people go on YouTube and they got a lot of shitty answers from crazy people or people with an agenda and stuff like that. So it's disappointing. I guess that, like as I said, it's like the biggest bummer of it all because, you know, in my job every day, I search out news on all the different, on all the three pillars, and eventually I get down to the fourth pillar, and I'm like, all right, what's going on in the world of conspiracy theory? And it's like, it's just a cesspool of contemporary shit that is not fun to talk about. Like vaccines and plandemics and all this other stuff, and it's not like I want to talk about how when the guy puts the flag in the moon and he twists the pole, you can see the ripple of the flag, and because of that, it means they're on a studio in Burbank. Give me those conspiracies. That's the ones you want to hear. So, yeah, more wacky conspiracy theories, please.
Yeah, ones that aren't, I mean, we spend every day of our lives now inundated with information from a multitude of news sources who are regurgitating the same news over and over again, and most of it is tragic. And those three pillars, and conspiracy theory being the faded fourth,
yeah.
Those three pillars, like, afford some people an opportunity to use their imagination and use the creativity that we have within us to think of wider, stranger worlds. And you don't have to believe in them, but it's fun to have ideas with them. It's fun to escape out of them for a while.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you and I have had this conversation before. I think I might have said this on the show before, but it's like that's kind of what part has driven me for so long, where it's like, to me, I can think of no greater thing to do with my life than to, and I'm very privileged that I can afford to do this, but it's to pursue the answers to the big questions. Like, that to me is, yeah. Like, that's, like, why are we here? It's like, maybe we're here to ask that question. Like, why are we here? So that's kind of what's kept me going all this time, that I can't think of anything more important than doing that.
Yeah, one of the things that I say at my lectures is, if just for a moment, while I'm saying this, just if we just took this as if this was the actual truth, if there were no such thing as Bigfoot and monsters, if there were no such thing as ghosts, if when you die you're dead, if there's no such thing as aliens and UFOs, if this is all there is, if those things, Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts, if those things only exist as a means and a mechanism to have conversations with people about the nature of this slight existence we seem to be having, then it's still vastly fucking important to have those conversations.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. That's they're here to facilitate those conversations. So,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. When we talk about conspiracies, you almost wonder, like, if it's some kind of, like, far-reaching generational conspiracy where it's like, we don't want the powers that be, don't want the average people or whatever, was it proletariat or whatever the hell you'd call it, but the public, to, because I'm thinking like back in the ancient times or whatever, they want to dissuade people from asking, from wondering if there's more to life than what they're experiencing. Like, maybe
yeah.
There's a certain control generational.
Absolutely. And on top of that, the conversations that we're having, and you and I discuss this a lot, and I know that you and I both on Twitter are like this, and some people find it off-putting and whatever, it's just the way that I am, but these conversations are also meant to be pretty fucking ridiculous and hysterical, because we are talking about monsters and magic rocks and beings from outer space. Like, it's pretty fucking silly, and you should have a pretty good sense of humor when talking about it.
Yeah, that's generally, yeah, absolutely. I love to shitpost on Twitter. That's my main, that's what my modus operandi on there. Because I try to get people not to take this so seriously. It's not really, and that's kind of like, I don't want to say I judge people, but that's kind of like one of my sort of like feel somebody out. It's like, well, if they have no sense of humor and they're militant about this, then I just generally want to avoid them because they're you know, they can't see the forest for the trees. Because this is all just fucking weird. It's absurd. That's the word I like to use the most. All of this is so absurd that unless you can really recognize and embrace that absurdity, you're kind of missing out on a lot of the fun of all this.
Yeah, if this is our only go around on this planet at this time, at this moment, in these bodies, why we're not having more fucking fun, I don't know what is wrong with people.
Yeah. Have more fun. That's definitely that's one takeaway people should get from from this show. Now, you have launched, you had a podcast before, but now you've got a new podcast. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I have a podcast.
I had
right
it
now.
Up.
You
I had the thing up. I was going to do a better job of mentioning
it. Oh, that's
it,
fine.
But now my computer's being an idiot, so.
That's fine, but I loved when you started the podcast off by saying that this is just you and some other person talking on a phone, because that's what my podcast is. Me and my friend Jessica talk to each other once a week on the phone. We record it and we put it out, and it sounds like shit because it's just two people talking on the phone, and it's one of those things where it's just two people being open and honest about who they are and talking about random bullshit from TV shows to haunted houses to ghosts to MMA fighting, to what our dog is doing, and, you know, her dog passed away. We went through that. My mom passed away. And
oh, I'm
it's
sorry.
Just two human
oh,
beings.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Two human. You didn't know that, Tim?
I think, well, I did. I think I reached out to you when it happened, but still, I'm still sorry. You know, it happened a while ago, right?
Yeah, it happened in January.
Yeah. I reached out to you at the time, but still, you know, it's a natural reaction to say sorry, but
usually when somebody says they're sorry, I'll say my mom passed away, and someone will say they're sorry. I will immediately turn to them and say, "Why were you involved with it?" And then they get really uncomfortable, and then I laugh. No, but the podcast is called "What's Up, Weirdo," and it really is. It's just. During the pandemic, I really missed going to bars and restaurants and hearing casual conversation. And so when I decided to do this podcast with Jessica, I was like, that's what it's going to be. It's just going to be casual conversation. No topic and nothing's off the table. And you're going to be you and I'm going to be me. And that's it.
Nice. How long have you been doing that for? So you say your mom passed away in January. So it must have been you've been doing it for at least since then, right?
No, we started in March. So, I mean, I broached the topic of my mother passing away when we first started. But, you know, by my mother talking again, I don't have any secrets. The last thing that my mother would have ever wanted to do is cause me any harm or sadness. And for me to, of course, just by human nature, I'm going to go through moments of grief and sadness and loss. But if she would have thought her death in any way was slowing me down or affecting me or changing me, I think that that's a dishonor to her memory. So, I mean, I think that she would be happy that I'm up at, you know, almost midnight talking about UFOs to some fucking guy on a phone.
Yeah. That's a great way of looking at it. I never considered it that way, but yeah. Moms, you know, yeah, moms are like that, so they wouldn't want you to.
Yeah, moms don't want you to be sad. They don't want to limit you. They want you to be your best, and they want the best for you. So, you know, I have chosen to be the best by talking to you.
Oh, wow. I'm honored. Now, what do you have? You said you had a crazy schedule so far. What do you have on the books, you know, coming up?
Well, if everything goes better.
Everything seems so tentative nowadays still, yeah.
Yeah, so tentatively, the big thing that I'm doing is next summer, I'm doing an event. I'll fly to England and then go to Stonehenge and the catacombs
wow.
in Paris and then the Lighthouse of Hercules in Spain. So that's in June of next year. We're doing a big paranormal European cruise.
Wow. Interesting. So Stonehenge.
Stonehenge. I'm very excited that I will be going to the cemetery where Benny Hill is buried. So expect to see a video of
wow.
me running around the cemetery to Yakety Sax.
Nice. Nice. I will maybe I should I don't know. I'm afraid that you'll take me up on this offer, but I have a picture. I went to Stonehenge when I was younger. And I have a picture. I have to find it. So we have time since you're for this ridiculous challenge. So I have a picture. Are you ready for this, John? Of me
yes.
mooning Stonehenge. So I have a picture of me mooning Stonehenge, which I will never release to the public unless when you go to Stonehenge, you moon Stonehenge and we'll release the I'll post the picture online. And we'll both be banned from Stonehenge probably. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But, yeah, I visited Stonehenge a long time ago, back in 2000. I didn't have the appreciation that I would now. I'd like to go back and check it out. I'm sure I would have a much different – well, fuck, I mooned it. So I'm sure I'd have a much, much deeper appreciation for it now. It's definitely one of those places I'd like to go back and check out.
Yeah, I think it'll be – if it happens, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I know that the tickets for it are selling really well. People can go to strange-escapes.com if they want to look at the information for it. But it should be a good
this
time
is a cruise?
If it happens. It's a cruise, yeah.
So how does that work? You're going to fly – you don't take the cruise ship all the way over to Europe, do you? That would take like –
No, we fly to England.
Okay.
We fly to England, yeah. And then the cruise ship leaves out of Southampton, England, and goes England to France to Spain, back to England.
Oh, it's like a Viking cruise. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So beyond, okay. So I heard the Stonehenge and the catacombs. And what's the next stop?
The Lighthouse of Hercules, I believe, in Spain, is one.
Okay, I've never seen
big
that.
Old ancient lighthouse there.
Wow, this sounds very cool. This is next summer?
Next summer. So fingers crossed that the Earth is still here, that most people are still alive, and maybe that'll happen.
There you go. All right. Is that what about lectures coming up? Anything you want to mention?
I really haven't booked anything. Normally, on a normal year, I take December and January off. So I've figured I did enough lectures this year where I can do that again, take December and January off. And I'll start booking again for stuff in February and beyond. But hopefully, if everything goes right by Christmas, I should have – hopefully, I'll have two books out for Christmas. One is all of the strange humanoid and formanauts that people saw in Michigan from 2018 to 2020. And then the other one is the second book. So my book that came out in 2019, Theoretical Weirdo, is actually three volumes. And the second volume should come out in December. It's called Anecdotal Weirdo, which is all strange stories that have happened to me. So hopefully those two books will come out in December.
Okay. Now I got to backtrack here. So this first book, this is – yeah, I noticed you did not say Michigan Mothman or whatever the fuck. So
No.
I hope you're not embracing that awful name, which I'm
No. In Michigan, starting almost at the end of 2017, throughout 2018 and 2019, ending in 2020, I researched a fairly large amount of cases, about 55 cases of people seeing what seem to be creatures, but they are very unlike, you know, creatures that people have seen, everything from giant hairy floating cubes to little running black triangles on the ground to legs with a, you know, aquarium on top of it. Very strange stuff. So I collected and compiled all those stories together. I got witnesses to sketch everything. I got a professional artist to redraw the witness sketches. And yeah, so interactions. The book is called Interactions with Formanauts. Will be the name of the book.
Ah, Formanauts. I like that. That's weird. That's really strange. Oh. How did you even get tipped off to all this?
So it all started with two emails from. It started with this guy who saw this giant floating cube in his neighborhood, and I went out and interviewed him. And then I did what I don't think a lot of UFO or researchers do in this day and age, which is I door knocked the neighborhood, probably about a quarter mile area around his house, looking for other people who had seen something similar. Obviously, I didn't tell them what I was looking for, but just asking them if they had seen anything weird in the neighborhood. And all of these cases started popping up, and they ended up being all over Michigan for about a year and a half, and just different, various, weird, bizarre, and absurd creatures.
Very strange. Interesting. Now, do people, these people who, we don't want to spoil the book or anything, but like, as a general question, like, do these people, do they see them, or are there stories of, like, interaction with these things?
So some interacted, and then some have just witnessed them. What's interesting is because these Formanauts are so bizarre, one of the things I had to do was, you know, I wasn't telling them what I was looking for, but let's say the triangular creature that was running around on the ground, one person, because there's no frame of reference, it gets described very differently, but they're describing a same similar type of creature. So like one person would say they saw a flat black triangle that was illuminated on top with LED lights but had legs, and it was running around the neighborhood. And then two blocks away on the same night is another person in the neighborhood who said that they saw a black cat running around the neighborhood, but it was on fire.
Jesus.
So
that's weird.
The descriptions are very strange, but I think it's because what people were seeing, they had no frame of reference for, so they were just in the moment. Like the guy who said he saw the cat on fire, I thought that was almost as fucking weird as seeing a black triangle with legs running around. Because he was like, well, the cat didn't seem to be in pain. It just was on fire, and it was running around the neighborhood. And it did, you know, it climbed up the side of a house, which cats don't climb up the side of houses. I mean, they can jump from roof to roof, but they don't climb up the side of houses. And so it's putting these stories together, seeing that they had some type of cohesion across a wide spectrum of witnesses was pretty interesting in putting the book together.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder what the hell was happening there. That's strange.
Now, something was going on, and I bet you it was going on all across America, and it completely ended right as pandemic hit, which I find very interesting.
I wonder if that's like a it's funny, I just ripped on the term, but like I wonder if that's like a Mothman effect. Not that these are Mothmen, but if that was like some kind of subconscious precursor to the pandemic, that like shit's gonna get weird soon, and you know,
I speculate heavily upon that in the book.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. It'll be interesting to see when we look back on all this what we can glean from it all. I thought it was interesting that I had my friend Kiki Dombrowski on during the Summer of Strangeness, and she does tarot and is sensitive, psychically sensitive and stuff. And I was talking to her, and it wasn't like giving her grief about it. It was more just like a general observation. But it was just remarkable to me that there didn't seem to be anyone who kind of like even predicted the vague outlines of a pandemic.
Right.
you know, at least as far as I know. There may be some person in Des Moines who's like, I fucking nailed it to a T, but no one reads my blog. But, you know, you would have heard about it, I think. And even, like, the example I gave was like, okay, maybe someone couldn't have predicted the pandemic or whatever, but it's like these, how come no one was like, I see a really strange fashion trend where people are going to start wearing, you know, different colored pieces of fabric on their face. Like, I want to say a mask, but that doesn't make any sense. But there's all of a sudden, and they're all going to be like, everyone's going to be wearing different things on their face. You know, like, no one even sort of vaguely got around the edges of what we saw over the last year and a half now.
Yeah, what I think is interesting, and I talked about this once at a lecture, but I don't hear very many people talking about it. It's just something I ruminate about in my own brain, which is there was a period of time in America where you had books, articles, newspaper articles, people in the newspaper writing columns making vast predictions about the future. And after 2000, that really kind of stopped. Like, you know, yeah, sure, maybe like the Globe or the like National Enquirer maybe kept doing like big world predictions. But up until about 2000, you had, you know, Gene Dixon and Criswell. You had all these people that were predicting the future up until the year 2000. And then since 2000, that kind of phenomena has gone away. And I find that kind of interesting.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that is really interesting. It makes you wonder, like, are we a culture that has, like, are we a culture that has somehow, like, lost sight of the future?
Right, exactly.
Very interesting, yeah. So if you put all our eggs in the basket of, like, 2000 and everything, and here we are 20 years into it, and there's not really any, even, like, maybe 20, I always said when the 2012 thing happened, it's like, oh, what's going to be next? And I'm like, probably 2020, because that's the roundest number. We saw what happened in 2020, of course. But, there's no sort of big date on the horizon that people are going to say, oh, things are going to change. And the millennial thing was just so monumental.
You don't hear anybody preaching about, like, what's going to happen in the year 3000 right now. You don't hear anybody saying, like, you know, 2200, that's the year. Like, that went on in America for 100-plus years with people predicting for 2000. We got to 2000, and people were like, yeah, forget it. We're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's really, really weird. I never really thought about it, but, yeah, well, it was a monumental for now we've reached the age where there may be people listening who didn't experience it, so
right.
I remember I still take perverse amount of pride, even though I have nothing to do with it. It was just it's a matter of luck. But I remember, like, the first on the first day, you know, January 1st, 2000, on the front page of the Globe, it was like, you're experiencing something that, you know, your grandfather and your great grandfather and like people, your ancestors 1,000 years ago, up to 1,000 years ago, never experienced. And,
right.
and the people like 1,000, you know, people up to 1,000 years from now won't experience. You've just crossed the millennium, even though it's some arbitrary counting system. It's still like it was. I don't know. Just that whole idea like resonated with me in a deep way, where I was like, "Holy shit, that's true!" Like this, I just went through something that even though I just counted down the clock or whatever, I was pretty drunk, I think, that night, but. Yeah, it was a once in a millennium experience. So maybe it kind of broke us a little bit.
I was sitting at my house by myself, waiting for it to turn to the year 2000, and slowly but surely, starting around 10 o'clock at night, all of my friends started showing up at my house. And at one point, there were about six people sitting in my family room. We were watching television, and I said, why did you all come over? And they said, well, just in case anything happens, you're probably the one that's going to know what to do.
Yeah, it was, I remember, yeah, I stayed in that night too, because it was like, who knows what's going to happen. People are going to be crazy. I thought it was going to be a lot.
Yeah.
crazier than it turned out to be. It was, you know, it was pretty normal. Like people don't remember like that there was like 2 or 3 years for the young people. Like, yeah, there was just like Y2K was a thing. It was you couldn't escape.
Oh yeah,
Y2K.
All the computers are going to shut down. All the atomic power plants are going to blow up. Your phones are not going to work. Electricity's not going to work. The trigger effect. This is what's going to set off the end of the world. Oh yeah, for 3 years that was pretty heavy.
Yeah, planes are going to drop from the sky. That was like the idea.
Yep.
It was like, how is that even possible? That like, because the clock didn't reset properly on the plane. Now it's just going to drop out of the sky. But like, they had you thinking that kind of shit. So, and I think, and the other part was, it came right on the heels of the Heaven's Gate thing. I think, right? Yeah, Heaven's Gate was pre Y2K. So it was like, there was also a concern. It was relatively close in time. People were still remembering it. So I think that there was also, least in my mind, there was like, okay, maybe there'll be death cults that do something stupid too. So I don't want to, you know, anything could happen.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Hellbop, Heaven's Gate, and then all of a sudden Y2K is coming. And then again, like you had computer programmers saying, you know, oh, so much of our world is now based on the computers. I mean, now if you think about computers crashing, like now people would actually be fucked. Like now it would be a big deal.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know how much of a big deal it would be in 99, but now it would be an enormous deal.
That's an incredibly astute observation that I didn't even think about. Yeah, yeah. Most people would have been like, they would have been able to get on with their lives pretty easily back then. So, it was an interesting time. And it does make you wonder, because now, especially like you're talking about the people who predict the future, and it's like we also, I mean, there was kind of a smidgen of this a few years ago, but you just don't see the big doomsday warnings and apocalyptic sort of like the world is going to come to an end shit. It's like almost, I think people are almost like, all right, I think we're in the midst of the world ending. So they don't really – they've kind of come to grips with that. It's like, oh, no, it's going to be a slow process, and it's actually happening right now or what. But you don't see a lot of like, oh, the world's going to end soon on a certain date or whatever. Like the Mayan calendar kind of squashed all that.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, there's the old saying about, you know, the end of the world doesn't happen with a bang but with a whimper. And I think that people – have really internalized that, like, you know, when you had end of the world and apocalypse scenarios in the past, everybody thought, you know, well, you know, Fengar the wolf is going to swallow the sun, and the Midgard serpent's going to crack the earth in half, and the demons rise out of the ocean, and there's seven-headed dragons and the whore of Babylon. And people realize now that it's just going to be kind of, if it does happen, it's just kind of a slow descent into madness. And, you know, that's pretty terrifying to me, but hopefully the aliens come and save us from all that.
God willing. Yeah, where are they? Our planet is dying. It's not it's not even like –
they're in a,
it's not
they're
even
hiding
about
in a cave
anymore.
Waiting for it to get better.
Yeah. It's not even about us. It's about – if you want to make any use of this place, you better come down soon and fucking clean it up, because well, they're just waiting for us to wipe it all out and wipe ourselves out, and then they can come and be like, all right, now we got a good new outpost here. Well, the world may not end.
What a happy way to end this podcast.
Yes, I was just going to say, we're talking about the end of the world here, and we've come to the end of the podcast, so – I really enjoyed this conversation. I couldn't ask for a better guest to get me back up and running here on the air. I'm so excited about being back, and I loved this conversation. And, John, you're one of the guests, one of the types of people I like to talk to, because you make me work. You make my brain work, and you make me think, you know, while we're talking. Some guests you can be like, all right, tell me about this, and you can – you can go and check your email, but this is like, this is a real conversation, really engaging conversation, and I really enjoyed it so much. And I'm stunned that it took us so long to sort of get you on Banal of America back when we started the Summer of Strangeness, but I expect an equally long future as we've had a history on this program. So I'm sure you're going to be part of the fabric of BOA for some time to come. And I can't thank you enough for, you know, jumping in here and helping me kick off the winter of weirdness.
Well, thank you for having me on, Tim. It's always a pleasure talking to you, whether it's on the radio show or drunkenly on a random night. Also, hopefully things will get to a point where you and I can go to a bar and both of us can be kicked out again.
Absolutely, yeah. We're going to have to make that happen in the not-too-distant future. I have a feeling it will happen. I have a feeling it will. So, all right, brother. Well, good luck and enjoy, and I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure. And have a great night.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
There you go, folks. That was John Tenney. Fabulous conversation. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. John actually had to get going because he's taping What's Up Weirdo with Jessica in like 5 minutes. So he said he had to go at 11. So I promised him I'd get him out of the craft with a little time to spare. So, yeah, that was the premiere of the Winter Weirdness. I loved it. I had a blast. I really enjoyed talking to John. That was awesome. Still getting used to, I mean, I don't think I missed a beat, to be honest with you folks, as far as hosting this ragtag podcast, but it will take me, I think, a little bit of time to sort of get back to running the bells and whistles of Banal of America, and I'm hoping to get the show posted by Thursday, so if I can really get a schedule going and stick to it, that would be nothing short of a miracle, but I'm going to really, really try. And what do we have on tap for you next week? This wasn't a one-off. This is the Winter of Weirdness. We're back, folks. Next week, we're going to be hearing from a first-time guest, ghost hunter Amanda Paulson. She runs I guess you could call it a brand more than anything. She has a website. She's done YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. She's got the whole nine yards, all the stuff that we don't do here on Banal of America. I'm barely on any of these podcast services. But anyway, she runs the brand, I guess you could say. She's the brainchild behind the brand Pretty Effin' Spooky. And she's been ghost hunting for over a decade, and she has all kinds of insights on ghost hunting, which we barely ever cover on the show, but it's something that I want to talk more about. And what piqued my interest specifically was that, and we're going to get into this on the show next week, she had just a crazy experience where she was in my neck of the woods. She stayed at the Lizzie Borden murder house, bed and breakfast. And for some reason, we're going to get into all this. I'm so intrigued by this whole story. You can book a room there to stay the night. So she booked a room for the Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast. And it turns out she was the only person in the house that night. Like, the staff all leave. The guests presumably have the run of the house. More often, I guess, than not, there's just not one person. But it was just her. And so it's like a solitary ghost hunt, if you will, which is just unsettling, and she documented it all on YouTube, and it was really interesting, and a lot of really weird shit happened to her while she was in the house. She heard and experienced a whole bunch of stuff, and like I said, it's all on her YouTube channel, and we're going to talk about that. I won't spoil the story too much, but that was, yeah, just a crazy, when I saw that, I was like, I want to know so much more about this story, and ghost hunting in general, because it seems like she's a little more on the skeptical side of things, but we'll get into that next week on the program. So it'll be fascinating. It'll be interesting. It'll be a lot of fun, I'm sure. So, yeah, that's next week. Amanda Paulson, Pretty Effin' Spooky is the website. Yeah, and we're going to get into all that. So on that note, the live lady's going to kick me off the air in a minute. So I want to thank all the folks in the chat room, mostly Zach Copley, who hung out the whole show, but also Wheel Nerds, who came in at the end to offer some insights. Thanks to those guys. Thanks to everybody who listened live, and of course, thanks to all, especially thanks to all the people who boosted this episode on social media. You guys are awesome, and thanks to everybody listening later on down the line. Next week, Amanda Paulson, Pretty Effin' Spooky, same but all time, same but all channel, Tuesday night, 9 p.m. It'll be December 7th. And on that note, once again, thank you all for listening. This is Tim Badal, signing off.